Welcome to Cave Talk, a podcast where we interview people inside the cave industry for tips, tricks, and the tea.
I'm Alan Mathis, but they call me Alabama Al because I am from Alabama, and our cave is Majestic Caverns, and I'm the owner of the caverns and started there about 48 years ago. We're located just outside of Birmingham, about 35 minutes southeast, out of a little town called Childersburg.
Cool.
And what's your first experience with the caverns?
Well, my first experience of any cave was my cave, and I had heard that my grandfather owned a cave in Alabama when I was in college, and I was kind of curious about it, and we moved to Alabama, and so on one of my breaks from college, I decided to get a friend of mine and go up there and see the cave, and we did, and it was very meagerly developed. In other words, we passed the road three times before we knew where the entrance was. It was just all grown up, and the sign was facing the road, so you had to kind of look to the right to see it. But we went there, and we went on a tour, and it was the funniest tour I've ever been on, because the tour guide actually only spoke about 25 words on the whole tour.
Oh, wow.
It was and like, how long was the tour?
It was about an hour. And so we were walking through the tour, and he would point his flashlight up in the air and say, in a very monotone, low voice, "Stalactite." And then we come to another formation, he'd go, "Stalagmite." And he'd point over here and say, "Indian bone." That was the 25 words for all things like that. But it was funny because after the tour, my friend and I that went to it, we sat in our car. It was a hot Alabama day, and we had the doors on the car, and we were just laughing and talking about the tour. And we laughed so hard that we actually rolled out of the car seats on the gravel park. but it was a great cave. It wasn't presented very well by that non-personality tour guide, and I didn't think anything more about it. And then when I was about to graduate from college, the man who had leased it from my grandfather offered it to me if I would work at promoting and developing it. So after praying about it and seeking counsel, I decided that's what I was going to do. And I went there, didn't know anything about caves, didn't know anything about business. Matter of fact, I started out as a business major and flunked my first two courses. So I'm not that good at that. But then later on, I went to an NCA meeting and learned a little bit about how to run a professional cave.
I have a quick question, though.
Sure.
What did you do with that tour guide?
That tour guide?
Yeah.
Oh, by the time I got there, he was gone.
He was gone? Yeah.
Yeah. Matter of fact, when I got there, everybody was gone. They'd been gone for a month. And I had arranged for a neighbor to keep the cave open while I was still graduating from college. And when I got there, I literally lived in the stock room. I had a sleeping bag on the floor and lived in the back room of the stock room. And, you know, I'd shower outside with a hose early in the morning with my swimming suit on. And use the outdoor restrooms, and that was pretty much. And then I got married.
Oh, okay.
Believe it or not, when I got married, we were still living in the back.
Oh my goodness!
Little 10x20 stock room, and but I had put plumbing in by then.
That's good.
Wow.
We didn't stay there very long, but we did start out like that. So to have those early beginnings of being very. And, you know, you're just as happy as anything. It really didn't make that much difference back then. And Now, I'm glad I'm not still there now. But in the same way, it's great to have those early, very humble beginnings and not having any money and just, you know, like if someone came up and wanted to go on a tour, I was the only person there. I would ring up their $2 ticket, you know, and give them a ticket. And then I put a sign in front of the door that said, on tour, be back soon, make yourself at home, and lock the door to the gift shop and go down to the cave. And if I came back or somebody else was there, I'd take them in, sell them a ticket, and take them down on the cave. Do that like 8 times a day. Wow.
I am familiar with this procedure. Well, that brings us to a really good, our next question that we had for you.
So how did you get started with the NCA, and how has it changed over the years?
Well, that's a good question. Actually, NCA used to have a newsletter, kind of like Cave Talk that we had. It was called Down Under, and it was a published piece, and they sent it out, I think, quarterly. And I would get them at our cave, because they must have sent them to all the caves. We were not members. I didn't really know, but I would read those. And I thought it was really interesting. And of course, they're advertising their convention coming up. And I think it was the second year that I was there, I decided to sign up and go to a convention. And it was at Marengo Caverns in Indiana. So it wasn't too far. It was only, I don't know, maybe a 4 or 5 hour drive. So I went up there and met all these NCA members. They were very friendly to me, and they shared all kinds of things, and I knew so little, you know. I was every area of management, I was trying to find out information. And I remember specifically Jim Richards from Blue Spring Caverns in Indiana. He shared with me how to do low voltage switching for our cave, because I didn't know electricity, I didn't know masonry, I didn't know any of those skills that help in developing cave. And the individuals that I made contact with were, you know, I was on the phone with them later on and getting more. I took a while to really understand all that, but a lot of it was do it yourself. You know, if you needed gravel in the cave, you carry 2 buckets of gravel in the cave and come back and do that all day long, you know, in the wintertime when nobody's there.
I have a good question. Where does the gravel go? Because I feel like our gravel just seems to vanish.
It does.
It does.
We continue to take more gravel in. But where does it come out? I don't know.
Who knows?
Yeah, it's a mystery. It's kind of like your socks in the dryer.
In the dryer, right, yeah. Exactly. There's a gravel gremlin stealing all the gravel in the cave. Yeah. I guess let's just do a horror or highlight. So a good thing or bad thing that has happened, like one of the craziest things that has happened while you've worked in this industry.
It could be crazy good or crazy bad.
Yeah.
Or both. We'll take both.
Yeah.
Let me see. I've had a lot of crazy experiences. the early beginnings that I already mentioned is a highlight to me, because it just shows a humble beginning. And I think the fact that we didn't have a lot of capital to throw into the cave, and so we basically were just taking the money that we made and then putting that back into the product and growing it. And I think the NCA has been a great help, but as we started creating more attractions and things for families to do to make them stay longer, so they would actually spend more. So we got involved with the International Association of Amusement Parks and Attractions, and we learned a tremendous amount from them as well. So I give them a plug, you might say, because that was very helpful to us, and we still continue to go to their conventions as well. And we learned a lot of things at the NCA, but we learned a lot other things from them as well. So there are a lot, just like different tourism organizations and things like that. But I'm gonna not tell you the embarrassing crazy things.
Oh, please do.
Speaking of embarrassing, though, Harrison actually mentioned some red pants.
Oh, yes.
I hear that you like to wear red pants.
You know, everybody's got to have a little flair every so often. And I'm not exactly the calm type person. I like to make a show.
Hey, that's
and that's
okay.
Part of the tourism and the entertainment business is really trying to just love on people. So I think I was suited for this thing. You know, I mentioned the other day when we were doing a little interview on the side of, you know, finding out what your why is.
Mm-hmm.
And I really believe that my why was, I didn't know it back when I said, yeah, I'm going to do this, try this cave thing for mm-hmm. 5 years. That I was really, this is a calling in my life to really steward this property well for the Lord. And I have enjoyed doing it all these years. And now I have a daughter that's doing the same thing. And so glad to see her working and enjoying it too.
Now, for those who don't know, can you talk about what is the why?
The why exactly is is to preserve this property that is very important to my Lord for the future generations. And if I wasn't there, I don't think it would have been preserved. It probably would have been, vandalized and as many of these things do. And so, I guess my why.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. really awesome.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, we really appreciate you talking with us today.
Well, thank you.
And have a great day.
Same to you. Bye-bye.
So I'm here today with Jim Yancey from Melrose Caverns, and we're pretty excited about this article that we've read in Cave Talk. Wouldn't you say so, Jim?
Yeah, it's really interesting with all the new technology coming through and how they're adapting newer modes of transportation to try to explore interplanetary areas.
So just back up for a second. What we're talking about is they want to send dogs to explore the moon and Mars. To be clear, this is not like the Russian dog that they sent up. This is going to be a robotic dog.
You see some of the pictures that they've got on here and what this article's explaining. I mean, this is really cutting-edge technology here, and it is going to revolutionize exploration into the future.
So, I mean, people are probably wondering, you know, why is this in Cave Talk? Well, one of the things that these dogs are going to be able to explore is the caves that are on the moon and on Mars. And I know a couple dogs we have here who love to explore caves.
Yeah, they do, and they can get into just about every crevice and crack there is. So this goes right along in the situation with being the right path for exploration.
At least this one won't need a bath after, though.
That's true. That's true. So, and one of the big things about this dog is that it has a self-righting program in it. So if it were to topple over, it can get itself back up and keep going again, unlike previous rovers that if they got stuck on a rock, they were stuck there. And so this is really, really moving ahead.
That was one of the things I was wondering, because sometimes we just spend billions and billions of dollars to get these, you know, rovers all the way to Mars. And then, you know, if the parachute doesn't deploy right, if it lands wrong, I mean, we're kind of stuff out of luck.
Yeah, you've got a problem. We've seen some examples of that recently. But with this, it's a relatively compact, small thing and far less expensive. And in the future, if this can come about, this is going to make the payloads for future exploration a lot lighter and a lot less expensive and far more capable.
And so you read a little more into this than I did. What do you think is, what's the most important part of this? I mean, why is this so relative to our caves and perhaps living on other planets?
Well, we know from our experience that when we're down in the cave, the elements outside don't penetrate us. It can be raining, it can be snowing, it can be hot. It's always 55 degrees in the cave. So if you take that and go to the moon or Mars, all the radiation, all the types of weather there, will be sheltered from them, from that, if you're in caves.
I mean, it's always 55 degrees in our cave, but there are other caves where it's not. I mean, have you ever been to Interspace Caverns? You haven't? I can tell you one thing. I was sweating in there.
Well, that's the thing about this dog. It'll be able to explore and find just the right caves for us in the right place so that astronauts in the future can take refuge there.
I thought one of the really interesting things is how the fact that they're going to send down also rovers with it, and somehow they're going to basically be able to network the dogs. They called them flocks, but if they're dogs, aren't they going to be packs? And be able to map larger amounts of area.
Yeah, they will. And because of that, they can move much, much faster, 3 to 5 miles an hour, which doesn't sound that fast, but that's a lot faster than these rovers go. And again, we go back to that, the ability to self-right themselves. That gives the controllers of this a lot more latitude to go different places.
I apologize for that noise, guys. I have one dog that's sitting right here with me. But she's not going to the moon anytime soon.
But she does like it in the cave.
She does like it in the cave. She likes to touch all the things I wish she wouldn't. Well, hey, thank you so much, Jim. I hope you have a great day. And you know what? Let's read more Cave Talk.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Thank you. Also, make sure to check out the National Cave Association website at cavern.com.